Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Minorities in Publishing podcast. This is Jen, and for new and returning listeners, you may know you can find the podcast on Tumblr at minoritiesinpublishing.tumblr.com, on Twitter at minoritiesinpub, and the podcast is expanding whenever I submit it for new areas. So it's been on iTunes, it's on Google Play, it's on iHeartRadio, it's on TuneIn, and it's on something else I can't remember right now, so I might end up cutting that entirely.
Okay.
I am very happy to speak. This is a Skype interview, another Skype interview, and I really enjoy doing those because it shows that everyone in publishing is not in New York City. And our guest today, Bria Chiara, is the editor-in-chief of Daydreamers Magazine, which is a new magazine, and a journalist and editor for BK Media. And you're in Pennsylvania, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And thank you so much for speaking with me via the Skype.
No problem, Jen. Thanks for having me.
And thank you so much for reaching out, because I really think it's important for people to hear from creators of their own material, but also those doing it in different sectors of the publishing industry. I mean, I've even kind of rejiggered it because originally the podcast was about book publishing, but the dearth of representation in publishing is throughout the entirety of the industry, and magazines and media outlets are a big part of book publishing as well. So I feel like you're such an asset to the branding and creation of just new voices.
Definitely. Magazine and media publishing is definitely taking over.
It really is. Digital is huge.
Yeah, there's new magazines popping up almost every day that I'm just like, what? This is amazing.
And conversely, they're also shutting down.
Yeah, that's true. The indie ones are popping up, and the big ones like Nylon and all of them, they're shutting down and just going digital, canceling print. So it's really interesting dynamic.
Yeah, so let's talk about your background, because I feel as though you're kind of a jack of all trades type when it comes to media, especially in terms of branding. And for the lay people, the uninitiated, as I like to say, can you kind of discuss how you got into the field via BK Media, but also how this helps those of us in the industry when more voices like yours are actually here looking at what we're doing and talking about what we're doing?
Sure. So honestly, I got into media and being an entrepreneur through rejection. When I first graduated from college, I went to Penn State for journalism. I had the idea that I was just going to work for a magazine in New York, be a writer, move there, work my way up in the company, or move to another company until I got to the best company, which in my mind was Vogue. That's really what I was on a pathway towards working for. Rejection hit. You know, I sent out a lot of job applications, internship applications, everything you could think of when I first graduated from college. And it was rejection letter after rejection letter after rejection letter. And I just felt like most of my time was being wasted on waiting on other people to make a move for me. I was waiting for my life to take off or to do the things I wanted to do with these people's permission. And it really started to frustrate me because I knew exactly in my mind what I wanted to do. Daydreamers was already pretty real in my mind, but I just didn't know that it was what it became, if that makes sense.
But I wanted to go back to that because you were saying about the rejection, but you also knew what you wanted to create. So was the basis to just learn more about the industry to create your own magazine down the line?
Not at all. I knew what I wanted to create as far as what type of work I wanted to do. I really am passionate about interviewing people. My specialty, I like to call it, is profiles. I write a lot of profile stories on writers, artists, musicians. And so that's something I really prided myself on in college. I wrote for my college newspaper, and I wrote a lot of feature stories on students on campus who are making a difference or really standing out. Or when we had musicians or writers come speak at the school, I used to always go and do a profile and cover those events. So that's the type of reporting I really like to do. I really wanted to do that. I really wanted to have some type of outlet where I could tell people's stories. That was really what I wanted to do with my writing craft. I wanted to help tell other people's stories of what they've been through and why they do the things that they do, especially the people who inspire me the most. So really the basis of Daydreamers is the interviews.
So what you were saying, because you went to Penn State, you said, for journalism. So you specifically knew you wanted to go into journalism.
Yeah, definitely. I knew I wanted to go into journalism since high school. So there was no doubt in my mind that I was definitely going to spend my life as a writer, as a journalist. It was just what path I was going to take. I kind of got nudged into the entrepreneurship lane from my rejection. I got tired of sitting around waiting for people to take a bet on me, and I decided to take a bet on myself. Mm-hmm. I had all the ideas of what I wanted to see in a magazine, but yet I couldn't really find those magazines around. All the mainstream magazines out there, they talk about things that, you know, I don't really care about. They talk about celebrities or, you know, with this one war, who got pregnant by this person. You know, stuff that's not really enriching our lives or anything like that. So I wanted to just take a risk and make my own publication. And I had no idea how to do that because I only went to school to be a writer. I didn't go to school to start a business, let alone start a magazine. So it really was just diving in, just a leap of faith, just really going off of whatever I felt in my heart that was the right thing to do. Of course, I was doing my little research and talking to other magazine editors whose publications I really enjoy, but it still was really, you know, a lane that I've never been in before. But it worked out. It worked out pretty good. We published our first issue last year in November 2017. Had a magazine launch party for it and everything. It was a really great turnout, really great support. And since then, it seems like it's really taken off. And right now, I'm just getting issue two together now. That's due to release in March, late March, for our spring issue.
Going forward about Daydreamers specifically, so this is print and online or just online?
This is print only now. Okay. When I first started the magazine in 2016, I started it online. And really because that was just the most comfortable place for me. And I really thought that digital and online was a little bit more popping than print. And I really didn't know exactly how to get it into print because I was working with low funds. So I thought the way for me to get my ideas out there and to test this theory I had with this magazine was to just get a URL, create a really great website, and start posting content and posting my interviews and opening submissions every month for people to post their content. Mm-hmm. After a year of doing that, midsummer of 2017, I ran into this guy. He's a photographer in Philadelphia, and we ran an internship together, a summer internship. And during our internship, we would talk a lot about the future of Daydreamers and what I wanted to do. Oh, and this was a point where I was really, really frustrated because although most of my feedback for the magazine was really positive, the negative always seems to be louder than the positive. I don't know why. And the negative was that, oh, you know, well, it's a blog, just degrading things like that. And looking back now, I don't know why I thought people saying my magazine was a blog was so degrading because now I have a blog too on the side, but it rubbed me the wrong way. And I thought, well, people's ideas of content being online, they always group it into these categories. And I think a lot of people group anything online that's like written content into a blog. So I thought, what was a way that I could actually step out and branch out and show that I am a magazine, that I'm trying to be a magazine company and actually grow, you know, a real media business here. The thing that came to mind when we were talking one day, and this was, I think, the last week of our internship, he said, you know what, yo, you should just do a print, like just go print for fall. We're coming up for fall. I think this was in August. I think I had maybe 2.5 months to put out a fall issue if I was going to do a fall issue. So I said, you know what, I probably should just do it because we were working all summer. I was working with my interns. I had a lot of great content. And this content that I was making over the summer with my interns was really different than the content that I was making in the spring and early winter of the year by myself. This content was something that I felt deserved to be published. It deserved to be in print. It deserved to be something tangible that you hold in your hands, not something you scroll and look through.
Print seemed to be a way to quote unquote legitimize the magazine.
Legitimize, yes, definitely legitimize, but also in a weird way stand out because a lot of people think that, well, I guess it is true that digital is, people will say, oh, journalism is dying because of digital and stuff like that. But I think journalism is just now experiencing its rebirth. There's a lot of indie magazines and publications that are online and in print. And I'm thinking we really have started to shift our attention to things that hold more meaning, things that are not online, are more sacred now. So I really thought by going print that that was a way that I could stand out from everyone online.
That's true. Especially for startups. Startups, like you said, aren't really doing print because of the monetary issue.
Exactly, exactly. And seeing the mainstream moguls break down and get rid of their print team, I said, yeah, this is definitely the time to go print because we're getting rid of the competition. So this is, it just seemed the perfect time for me. And ever since I launched the print issue, I got rid of the online site because I actually fell more in love with being a magazine editor on the print side than I did on the digital side.
Really?
Yeah, I felt more like a magazine editor dealing with the print, dealing with submissions, helping writers edit their work, doing Adobe InDesign, laying out and designing the pages. I felt like I was really creating something. And the best part about it is that it's something that's timeless. It's something that's just always going to be. Online is such a mysterious thing, and it could go away any day. Like, we don't know what the internet really is. Like, the internet could just shut down any day, or, you know, social media accounts get hacked every day. So I really fell more in love with what I was doing once I took it back to the traditional way of publishing.
So is Daydreamers quarterly? It's kind of seasonal then at the moment?
Daydreamers is quarterly. Okay. So our first issue was 2017. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to stay true to the quarterly reputation I'm trying to have for the magazine and come out every three months. So the spring issue is coming out in March. That's what I'm working on right now. And I'm going to try to have a summer, fall, and winter issue out this year. So I plan to put out 4 issues this year. It's pretty good. I just was going through the submissions this morning, and I was surprised to see that I got double the amount of submissions for the second issue that I did for the first issue. I definitely think that it won't be a problem at all to put these issues out as long as I just keep going. Mm-hmm.
So talk a little bit about what Daydreamers is. I mean, I can infer from the title, but you said you're interested in profiles, but is Daydreamers primarily about profiling people, or is it a mixture of features, profiles, hot takes?
Daydreamers is a literary arts magazine. Its main focus is writing and the art. It's definitely a mixture of profiles and writing. The profiles allow me to share stories of people who inspire me, whether they're artists, writers, or musicians. I think it's really important to share people's stories. The way that I share people's stories is not really the same as anyone else. When I do interview people, I don't like to ask the questions that they've been asked a million times.
Of course.
Oh, why did you start writing? Or why did you start this? Or what's your biggest... No, like, we already know about that. You can find that at the other interviews that they did. I like to really get to know the person. My whole point of interviewing a person I really admire is to get inside their head, is to become their best friend by the end of the interview. I want to make my readers feel like they know this person, like the person's songs that they sing in the shower and the person's art that they look at and the person that they look up to, they know and they identify with. Mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest mission with Daydreamers, is to show that we're all the same at our core, like in our heart, we're all the same. We all care about the same things. We all want to find love. We all want to just make money from our craft. We all just want to create and be at peace. And definitely on the flip side, I wanted to create a space that was safe for writers and artists. I know growing up with my art, I knew that it was something that I enjoyed doing after school or in the lunchroom, writing poems and writing short stories, but I never really knew that that was like a talent or a God-given gift. I just thought it was just something I did when I had free time or I had to get things off my chest. Honestly, I had a diary that I stored under my bed. The way that I grew up with my writing, it was just really secretive and almost shameful in a way. So I wanted to challenge that and rebel against that and have a publication that was a place for writers where they can feel safe to share whatever it was they were feeling.
So it's technically, is it kind of like a style magazine or really a literary journal?
It's a literary journal more so. Okay. Definitely. If you look inside the magazine, it's interviews, poetry, it's short stories, it's illustrations, and it's photography, portrait photography.
Going back again, but referring to, because you said, yeah, you went to Penn State for journalism. So you said you knew how to write, but then you're coming into the business end. You're becoming an entrepreneur, you're becoming an editor, a publisher. You're a publisher, essentially, but you're a publisher, and the publisher wears so many hats, literally, in terms of what you're doing and creating your book, your journal, your physical product every month, as well as. Even though you don't have the online journal anymore, like having a presence so people know about it. So, can you speak to how you learned about that? Or is it just kind of learning as you go? Or via the internships, you mentioned doing internships, kind of getting some feedback or any mentorship in that way?
It's definitely learning as I go. I learned a little bit about content marketing, social media marketing, but not to the extent that I'm doing it. Because when I was an intern or working for other companies, I was always playing a type of supportive role. But I'm all of the support that I'm going to get with this business. So it's pretty much me figuring out the content marketing plans and then having to put them into action and then measuring them and seeing what works and doesn't work and caring enough to change it or research it some more, try to find a way that I can do it better. Definitely, it's been a challenge because it's going to sound so bad, but I don't
I mean, it
care
is like
about.
creating your own business is a challenge, and there's just going to be ups and downs.
It's a challenge, and I really hate how much emphasis we put on social media because I don't like social media. The only reason I'm so active or more active on social media now is because of my businesses. If it wasn't for my businesses, I'd probably post like once a month, if that. I really am not really fun on social media at all, and marketing is the thing that I have to learn every day. I have to force myself to sit down and read a marketing book, or force myself to dedicate a couple of hours a day to reading articles about marketing your magazine or marketing yourself on Instagram. Because it's not the thing that comes first to me. Even though, I'm a business owner, the thing that really excites me more about my business is the freedom to create. But that's not how you get a successful business just off of creativity alone. You have to have strategies and all these other things laid out that have been really difficult for someone like me, just because I'm so artsy fartsy.
Yeah, you're focused more on the content than the
Yeah, I'm
marketing
focused
in a
on
way.
entertaining and just creating a platform for writers and daydreamers worldwide.
So do
It's
you
definitely.
think at some point you'll be able to bring in more people to help on that side so you can focus on the creative and let someone who is into that do the marketing business savvy stuff that requires that kind of attention to constantly be connected?
Definitely. I'm really praying for that every day. I'm hoping that this is the year where I can start to assemble a team, a branding team, a marketing team, an outreach team. So I'm definitely hoping that this is the year that I start collaborating more and I start building a team. And I also do more internships. I really want to have summer internships every summer. The internship that I led last summer, I really enjoyed it, and the feedback I got from my interns was just incredible. It was just really weird to think that I had so much influence in somebody's life. We're the same age, we both graduated from college, and yet they're telling me that they learned so much and they got so much experience from working with my magazine, which was only like 6 months old. I'm definitely looking forward to more experiences like that to lead internships and do more collaborating with other creatives, definitely.
And being in Pennsylvania, not to say, oh, everything's cheaper there, but I mean, you're talking to someone from New York, New York City, where you could definitely spend $80 in a day on food. Again, going back to the business end, you're creating something in print, you're getting interns. How has it been like generating the money to kind of back that and to kind of be forward thinking in creating and achieving more funds to keep this going? Because, like we said at the top of the episode, places fold because they just haven't expected what's happened or they just don't know how to find the audience. And because yours is an arts journal, that is very specific. That's very different from Teen Vogue or Vogue, like where you wanted to work at initially. So, because you're specifically so concentrated in the arts, and generating that good material, but also being different. Can you speak a little bit about that?
The money revenue, it's definitely been the hardest part. That's probably been the part I've stressed over, cried over, screamed over.
Money is something to scream and cry over. I hear you.
Yes.
Even when you have a full-time job, it's something to scream and cry over.
It is. It really is. Because I don't know what it is, but I guess I don't want to say it's hard to get people to purchase your products. Because I know it's not that. I know it's a marketing issue and something that I need to focus on.
Well, I think it's both.
But when
I mean, being that you had free content. Digital equals
right.
Free content. And you're making off of ad revenue, then you go and say, well, now you have to pay for that content. I wonder if also the digital age has affected us and these expectations of everything should be free. Even I sometimes I'm like, oh, I have to pay for this. I have to do a subscription. Whereas 15 years ago, it's like, yeah, subscription were the thing. That's how you got anything.
I really think going online first really kicked me in the butt. I really wish, looking back now, that I would have just started off print first. And I do believe that sales were not as great as I wanted them to be because people were maybe under some weird expectation that it shouldn't have been as much as it was, or it should have been free because the online content had been free. So it was really hard to switch over from free content to paid content. Mm-hmm. Successfully. That's something I'm still struggling with, honestly.
I appreciate these candid conversations because I feel as though, you know, we don't talk about that. And it's also easy for someone within an established business model to say, oh, this is what we're doing. But when people are doing startups, it is a very different matter. And there is a lot to think about. And also I think, and I enjoy your opinion on this too, is do you think people are hesitant to pay for art?
I do think people are hesitant to pay for art, but I just don't know why. It really, it's a question that I even have to sit with for a while. I don't know if it's just maybe the economy, mm-hmm. and maybe people just don't have it in their expend for things like art, because I guess it is a luxury when you think about having to pay for, you know, your house, your car, your clothes, your food. But people enjoy art. Artists love art. Writers love art. Of course, I know plenty of people who have booming, successful businesses, whether they're fashion designers or writers, you know, that books are selling all over the world, millions of copies. But my personal experience, it's been pretty hard to get people to pay for art. I don't know if it's because of where I am, where I'm located, because I'm located in Philly and not somewhere like New York or L.A., but I'm kind of happy not to be based in such a heavy populated media city because it's allowed me the free time and the breathing space to think about my brand and the way that I want to grow it. Mm-hmm. I feel like if I was in a place like LA where there's probably thousands of magazine editors or publishers in one city, I think the pressure of it would have doomed the publication before it began. Mm-hmm. I think I would compare myself or subconsciously start copying someone else who I really admired instead of digging inside myself and creating from within mm-hmm. and creating something that's original and something no one else has seen before. Mm-hmm. So I'm grateful for where I am. You know, everyone has to start somewhere. That's the only probably good thing about social media is that you can connect to people from all over the place. My submissions come from places like Africa, London, New Amsterdam. People submit from all over the world, and that's only because we have the internet and social media. Without these things, these people wouldn't be able to find my magazine and be able to email me and send me their work. The good in this is that before it started as something that I wanted to do, that I was doing solely for me, but now it's something that I'm doing for others. I feel like I have now a commitment to this. Mm-hmm. I feel like people are waiting for an issue every 3 months. People are anticipating to submit their writings and their photography every 3 months.
And I want to actually talk about your course study at Penn State because you said you were doing a lot of writing. Was there any kind of input on anything outside of writing, or was it really just straight, this is how you edit, this is how you research, or can you speak a little bit about what that journalism course was like that would kind of promote where you as a student would want to go, because you said you wanted to go to Vogue and then you changed your mind and started a literary magazine because you said you always had something like that in mind anyways.
It wasn't all journalism. I minored in women's studies. With those classes, we talked about the real world. We studied things like sexism, white privilege, all those things. And we had a lot of essays we had to write, and these were analytical essays, and I had to look at things going on in my culture and the world and dissect them and analyze them.
And you're getting all that out of women's studies?
Yes. Yeah. Ooh. Women's studies is popping. It's not what you think.
It has changed since I went to school. Make me feel old. I'm like, it wasn't that long ago, but apparently it was.
I remember when I was telling my friends that I chose my minor in women's studies. I think we got to choose our minor our second year. And I was telling my friends, and they're like, what? It's probably so boring. I'm like, no, it really opened my eyes. I think with my journalism classes, it was all about research and deadlines. Go, go, go. Get this source and get that source and call this person for an interview and do this transcript. You know the world of journalism. It's very, you never have any time for anything. My women's studies classes really allowed me to get more in touch with the world around me and the way I connected with people. And so that brought me back to where I began with my writing. And I first started with writing on the creative side. I first started writing poetry, love poems, short stories, things that I made up in my mind. And so once I returned to that, there was no way that I could let it go again because I fell in love with it all over again. I was like, how can I let go of writing poems? Writing poetry is amazing. I wanted to find a way where I could combine both of them and have a space where poetry and creative writing and also the hardcore reporting and feature stories could live in the same space.
So what's next for you and for Daydreamers?
I'm just really looking forward to growing the magazine. I'm looking forward to collaborating with more creatives all over the world. I really would love to get more into YouTube now that the online magazine has been taken down. When you go to daydreamersmag.com now, you'll just see previews of whatever issue we currently are selling for and things like that. But I really want to get into YouTube and do something like a weekly interview series segment because I really miss interviewing local artists and I want to give them a platform because Daydreamers really started out with me wanting to give the underdogs a voice. My main frustration with media was that the same five popping people were showing up in every cover spread in every magazine. I really wanted to give a voice and a space to people who are just as talented or more talented than the people with 5 million Instagram followers. I really would love to, and I really like to create teams all over the world for Daydreamers. I mean, little media teams. So maybe have a media team based in London that I collaborate with for issues. Have a media team based in California, a media team based in New York. I really like to spread my roots with Daydreamers and find little communities of Daydreamers in different areas of the world and try to collaborate with them for different issues. Working on the magazine is fun, but I really am yearning for that sense of a team. As a business owner, I really do understand just how sacred and important teams are.
So how can people access Daydreamers and get in touch with you, submit if you're taking submissions still, but also just support and buy it because you can get it outside of Pennsylvania, right?
People can support by following us on Instagram. Our handle is DaydreamersMag. Our handle on Twitter is DaydreamersMag with the underscore in between Daydreamers and Mag. So it'll be Daydreamers underscore Mag on Twitter. Our domain URL, daydreamers.com. People can definitely check out our website if they want to purchase a copy. There's also links on our social media to purchase a copy. If you want to get in contact with me, you can email me at bria@daydreamersmag.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, although I'm taking a Twitter strike for now, but I may be back on there around summertime. Who knows? Yeah, those are the ways you can get in contact with me. Our submissions, I always put out calls for submissions on our Instagram a month in advance. So you can always check that out and follow along for that.
And I believe in the longevity of daydreamers. It will happen.
Yes, yes. Where daydreamers run wild. Yes.
Thank you so much for being on, Bria.
No, thank you, Jen. This was amazing. You're my first interview of the year.
What?
Yeah. I had this fire in my soul around Christmas time. I was like, you know what? I'm going to just email people and I'm going to be like, listen, this is who I am and what I do, and you should talk to me. So I'm so grateful that you saw something in me and you really support the vision and what I'm trying to do. So I really thank you.
Thank you for your time. I know it's precious being doing all that you do. So I always appreciate everyone who would like to talk about their experiences and be very open about it. Because I think it's great for the community to know and then to know about a place they can support.
Yeah, this is an amazing podcast. Minorities in Publishing. When I found you, I was like, oh yeah, this is it. This is it. It's a cake.
4 years in the making.
Keep going. It's amazing. It's great to give people this outlet.
Thank you so much. And for those, again, who are following and listening, you can hear the podcast at iTunes, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Google Play, and more to come. But also on the podcast Tumblr at minoritiesinpublishing.tumblr.com. And I have a newsletter. I should have done that 4 years ago. But I didn't. But I did now. So you can sign up at the newsletter. It's at the pinned tweet at the top of the podcast Twitter, Minorities in Pub. Thanks again, Bria.
Thank you, Jen.